Good afternoon, welcome. Mohamed, how many people should I expect here? Is that the right number or should I wait a bit more?
Thank you. We've been good, sir.
Okay, very good. So there's a new section of the course, as you might have noticed by me being here again. And in this section, we are going to talk about differential equations. It's a large field in physics. And as a warm-up exercise, I'd like to introduce ordinary differential equations and how to handle them numerically. Do you know what ordinary differential equations are? I guess so. Blank stares. Man, that is difficult to teach if there's blank stares. So ordinary differential equations are differential equations that only depend on one scalar variable. In physics, for example, people would often use time for that. But in the actual notation, it's not time. But people use x as the independent variable and y as the dependent variable. I just want to briefly go through some examples. I don't know if you find that boring, tell me. Otherwise, let's go through that. So differential equation, we have y prime of x is given by some function of f that can depend on x and on y as well. And this function f is called the right-hand side. In an amazing lack of imagination, because it's on the right-hand side of the equation here. And I just want to go through some simple equations so to get you a bit of an idea. For example, if the right-hand side, and then we have a solution. If the right-hand side is just 1, what would the solution be? We can go through that fairly quickly. That should be boring to you. Very good. Oh, thank you for the plus c. Very good. And if this is x, then the solution is?
X squared plus c. Mm-hmm. X squared over 2.
And if this is y, then the solution would be?
X squared over 2 plus c.
Pardon? Oh, yes. Thank you. And if this is y, then the solution is? Yep.
C times C to the X.
E to the X?
Yes. C times E to the X. Correct. And yes, usually you have a factor A in front of it, A times X, and then you get a factor A in front of it. And if that A is negative, you have a decay rate, for example, for radioactive decay. Okay, after that, I want to show you how to solve ordinary differential equation numerically. And actually, ordinary differential equation, if you allow me to philosophize, is one of the big success stories of numerical analysis. When I was learning numerical analysis, you needed to write your own algorithms to solve these. And there were some algorithms, you would go to textbooks and implement them and test them. And that's not necessary anymore. The algorithms have become so good and so reliable that you can just use a package to actually solve that. So it's good to actually implement an ODE solver yourself, but for anything you'll do in the future, it's very likely that you just use a package using differential equations, for example, and then you get something that's probably better than you would implement yourself, except if you hit a special case. That's not true in other cases. For example, when it comes to solving partial differential equation, you're going to move to that tomorrow, that's different. You still need to use your own methods because the existing methods aren't reliable or general enough. But for ordinary differential equations, that's essentially, well, for most cases, a solved problem where you just throw a package into it, and if it doesn't work, you start reading the documentation and get better and better. And it's like when you evaluate the sine function. If you type sine of x, you don't implement your own sine function, making sure it's accurate. You just trust the people who wrote the library that you're using. And for ordinary differential equations, we are almost as good as for the sine function. There are very few cases where you need to do your own things. Now, do you have an idea, a suggestion for solving this? I think the easiest method is attributed to Euler. It's a very simple method. It's called Euler's method. I don't know who actually invented it. Do you have a suggestion for doing that? Okay, we just write the derivative out, then we have dy by dx equals f of x comma y, and we replace this by a finite difference, and then we have y of x plus h minus y of x divided by h, and then we arrange it, and then we get y of x plus h equals y of x plus h times f of x comma y. This is also called Euler's method. Where you choose a step size h, and then you start from some initial condition, and then you evaluate the right-hand side at that time, and you take that time step, and then you arrive at the next thing. So if I show that graphically, let's use that case here. Actually, no, let's use an exponential function. So we have x, and we have y, and we have an exponential decay. What does that look like? It looks approximately like that. Now comes the time where I look for color again, and then we choose some initial condition at x equals 0, and then we evaluate the right-hand side here. In that case, the right-hand side is just y, so the slope here is just what is wrong? Yeah, no, the slope is just, let's assume it's just minus 1 here in that case. And then this would be the tangent. So then we take a time step. Then we arrive here. Then we take another step, arrive here. And so on. So we have a step size. Oh, wow, that wasn't drawn very well. That would be that step size here. And we can also write it down in a slightly different way, where I describe what happens during every step. Each of the steps are the same. We start with some initial condition, and then we take a step, and we arrive here. And then what we are doing here for the second step is the same that we did for the first step. So each step, we have point y0. Then we evaluate the right-hand side. The right-hand sides are typically called k. So we evaluate k0, which is f at, well, we also have an x0, I guess. x0 and y0. And then we calculate y1 as y0 plus h times k0. And that is the algorithm. The input is y0, we evaluate the right-hand side, and then we get y1, and then we work ourselves through that. It's intuitive. I don't know into how much detail I need to go here, whether you understand that or not. Let me just skip ahead. I also want to briefly discuss what the error is that you get in this method, because you can imagine the larger step size you take, the larger the error is that you get. And to analyze the error you get in a step, one way to do that is to Taylor expand the solution y about the starting point at x0. And then we have y of x0 plus h equals y at x0 plus, well, that's y prime at x0 plus, let's be a bit more explicit, 1/2 h squared y double prime at x0 plus higher order terms of order h cubed. And this is true for the analytic solution. If you compare that to what we have written down here, then you see that what we should be getting at y plus h is y at x0, which is what is here, plus h times the derivative of y. Here we have h times f, but f is just y prime. So we have this term here, we have this term here, and that's it. This term here, we don't have that. So that is the error. So the error for this Euler method is of the order h squared. That means if you have a linear function, there is no error, that's fine. It's kind of boring having a linear function. But if you have a quadratic function, say a parabolic function or something else, you get an error. And is that correct? I hope I'm not maneuvering myself in here somewhere. I think the error should be of the order h. I'm very, very sorry about this here. The error should decrease linearly with h, not quadratically with h. I have a mistake here at the blackboard. The thing is, if you make h smaller, the error goes down. Yes, did you see it?
Because you also divide by a, it's in the function of the derivative. Or is that not correct?
Yeah, I think it's something like that. Okay, I am very sorry that I don't find this.
Because you want to compare y prime, I think, with that. But y prime as y of x 0 plus h minus y.
Yes. Oh, it could be something else. The error is order h squared if you take one time step of size h. So if you make h smaller, you're also taking smaller and smaller time steps. In reality, you want to integrate from x0 to x1. That means if you make h smaller, you need more time steps. And the number of time steps that you need to take is inversely proportional to h. If h is smaller, you need larger time step. And this is why you get another factor of 1 over h. So the actual error for finite integration is then of the order h. If we take half the time step, we had twice as many time steps, so the error term here becomes larger. Okay, but if you take only one time step, then the error is indeed h squared. Thank you for helping me pointing that out. Okay, and there are, of course, better methods than that. Linear convergence is not good. And I should also point out that Euler's method is not a good time integrator. Don't use that. It's, in many cases, unconditionally unstable. And but it's a nice thing to experiment with. So I also want to show you how, in principle, one can construct an ODE solver that is more accurate, how one... The idea is that you have higher order terms here, this error term here. You can cancel that in various ways. And I want to demonstrate that on the blackboard. And if you find that confusing and so on, stop me. I'll be happy to explain that in more detail. Oh, I'm writing on the wrong blackboard. Gates, you need to stop me if I do that. Okay, there's another method. It's sometimes called a second-order Runge-Kutta method. Presumably, it was invented or popularized by two people, Runge and Kutta. And the idea there is that you evaluate the right-hand side twice. That is, if you want to integrate from, say, x0 plus h, the idea is, you evaluate the right-hand side here, you take a time step here to the middle, you evaluate the right-hand side here again, and then you take another time step from here where you take the right-hand side evaluated here. And then the error is actually smaller. Have you all seen that before or not? I think one or two of you have seen that before. Okay, so let me write down the algorithm in that way here. You start with your value here at x0, then you calculate k0 as the right. Oh, I like this blackboard here. It's much better than that one. At f of x naught and y naught, then you calculate an intermediate solution y1 as y0 plus 1 half h times k naught. Then you evaluate the right hand side there again. And then you calculate the full solution y2 as x naught plus h times k2. But let me draw that again. You have a solution here. You want to integrate from here to here. You evaluate the right-hand side here, and then you take a time step that goes to the middle. So you kind of move down here to the middle. And then here, you evaluate the right-hand side again. And then, of course, you get, so the slope is here. The evaluated right-hand side is just taking the derivative, so it's kind of the slope, the tangent here. Then you evaluate the tangent here, and that will be slightly different. And then you take a time step from here, using the right-hand side evaluated here, and then you get something where you end up much closer to the final solution here. And you can also prove that analytically, and I hope that is not going to be too confusing when we write this out, but add all the error terms that we have. And then we see that the order h squared error there cancels as well. Is that algorithm here clear? Do you understand it? Could you kind of, with a bit of help, implement it yourself in some programming language? Probably could. Okay. So the actual solution here at a half time step, y at x plus 1 half h, we Taylor expanded. This is y at x naught. Let me call this y naught. That is the solution at x naught. Plus 1 half h y naught prime. Let's call this, let's call it y naught prime. And the factor 1 half here is because we're only taking half a time step. And the next term, the next error term, is then 1 eighth h squared y naught double prime, 1 eighth because it's 1 half squared times the 1 half from the Taylor, plus something of the order h cubed. And the term by 1 that we have here is the correct solution here. But some terms are missing. So y1, the one that we have calculated here, is the solution that we have here. So I'm trying to calculate, I'm calculating the error that we're making in this time step here. And the terms that we're missing, this term is present here. That is what we're calculating. So, sound works? Yes? There is this term here, and there we have a term of the order h squared that is missing. What? This is this term here? Yes. Plus an error of order h squared. And then we calculate k1, which is the derivative of this here. This is then I want to expand that a bit more. This is then y naught. I'm expanding this in a Taylor expansion as well. Now, if you evaluate k1 at this point, then we get k is just f is y prime in that notation. This is just the derivative. So this is going to be the derivative of this. This is y prime, x naught plus 1/2 h plus order h squared, which is y naught prime plus 1/2 h y naught double prime plus terms of the order h squared. And if you calculate the final solution here, y2, then this should be the term that we have up here. And if we look at the terms that we are getting here, we have, let me just write it out, y0 plus h k2. This is then y0. Plus h times, sorry, what? No, this is k1 here. Sorry, there's no k2. Which is this term here, y0 prime plus 1/2 h squared, 1 h here, 1 h here, y0 double prime plus something of the order h cubed, because you're multiplying this term with h. And if you compare that to the actual solution, you see there are no more correct terms here. And the error is now order h cubed, or the error of the finite time is order h squared. So we gained one order of accuracy by doing these things, by cleverly combining these terms. So this is a more complicated algorithm. In particular, it's not the same as taking two small steps here. That would be a different thing, or taking one large step right away. This is kind of evaluating things in the middle and combining this. You don't have to put a factor 1/2 here. It also works with other factors. This is just one example. And this way, you can cancel the first term of the error. You can imagine, you can do this, you can repeat doing that as well. You can cancel the third, fourth error, and so on as well. There is something that I'm not going to describe today, because in a compact course like this, you have to cut corners somewhere. And that is that these methods can be either stable or unstable. And when it comes to numerical analysis, there are many different notions of stability. It's not that Leonhard Euler described what stability is, and then everybody's using that notion of stability in all fields about in numerical analysis. There are unfortunately different notions of stability for ODEs and for matrix multiplication and for PDEs and so on. They sometimes have slightly different terms. And whether something is stable or unstable depends on the context, so you need to be careful. So this method, even the one that I described here, the second order Ruhmann-Kutta, isn't really a good method. And if you want to go to higher order methods, there are fourth order methods that evaluate the right-hand side four times. But if you say want to go to eighth order, it's not enough to evaluate the right-hand side 8 times. You need to evaluate at least 13 times or something to actually get a stable method. So canceling the error terms is not enough. You also need to look for stability. And let me try to give an intuitive notion of stability, because I think that's more important than the actual definition. Something is unstable if the error grows in an uncontrollable way. So if you reduce the time step size and the error gets reduced in the same way, that is usually fine. But if the error grows without bound, so to say, that would be unstable. Let's leave it at that. Okay. These are ODE methods, and I think we should implement some of these simple ODE methods. I should just show you how it actually looks like, and then we can solve a simple ODE. And I also want to use how to use this package here later on, although I'm not going to start with that. So one of the simplest problems for solving an ODE is harmonic oscillator. You might have heard of that. And I forgot one thing. Sorry. Need to light again. So far, I have acted as if y is a scalar function here. And I mentioned that x needs to be a scalar. But if we look at the algorithm and that what we do here, Here we evaluate the right-hand side. The right-hand side is the derivative. Calculating the derivative with respect to x is a linear operation. Then we take the right-hand side, multiply it with h. H is a scalar because I said there's only one independent variable, and we add something else. These are linear operations, right? Multiplying with the scalar and adding something. And it turns out all the operations that we perform here to solve an ODE system, these are all linear operations. So we don't actually need y to be a field or a ring or something. It's enough if it's a vector space. That is, we can not only solve ODEs for individual functions, but also for vector-valued function. X, the unknown here, needs to be a scalar. Otherwise, it's not an ODE anymore. But y, the dependent variable, can be a vector. And that means if we have two unknowns that we want to solve, that works fine as well. And the harmonic oscillator, of course, there are two unknowns. So let's start with that. Just write down the equations for a harmonic oscillator. Okay, so what are the unknown variables? What describes the state of a harmonic oscillator? I let you choose the variable names here. What do you need to do? So you have a particle that oscillates in a potential. What do you need to know about the particle to predict the future?
Initial position and velocity.
Yes, thank you. So it's two things, initial position and velocity. Let's call it P and V. So is that the thing that works here? Nice. Okay. So, and the way to store that in a convenient way, so that Julia also knows this is a vector, is that we have an array of two elements. I know it's a bit unclean. And the first element corresponds to the position, and the second element corresponds to the velocity. And then we need to write down the equations. So we have P as position. I shouldn't have called it P, whatever. Dot P equals the time derivative of the position is the velocity. Does that work? It wants to be marked down. Does that work? Very good. And the time derivative of the velocity is, if you don't like the name P, tell me, I can change it to X. Maybe that's better. P sounds a bit like momentum. What's the time derivative of the velocity? I'm just trying to get you to participate here. It's really not difficult.
Acceleration.
That's the acceleration, yes. And the acceleration is given by? So the potential is x squared, or 1/2 x squared. And then the force is given by the derivative of that. Okay, this is minus the gradient of the potential, so it's given by minus x. There's usually a constant here in front of it, but I'm going to skip that. If you solve something numerically, it's usually important. It's usually very convenient if you choose your units correctly. There's no point in using SI units or anything if the numbers become really large. And so we just assume that the prospective constant in the potential is that. Okay, so this is the equation that we want to solve. And let's write a function for that, right? This is function is called f. Call it fho, harmonic oscillator. And the state vector is usually called u. And let's write that function. Where did it go? Hello? You're kidding me. Go away. No! What is this? Hey! Oh, is there an undo? What is this? Who knows what happens here? So the input is the state vector. Yeah, yeah, parse error, sounds good. And we need to get the position and the velocity out of u. U is supposed to be a vector of size 2. Let's write vector here just to make it clear. And then we get the things out. Oh man, this is all acting up. I express my unhappiness. This is not useful. X comma v equals u. This, so we take u apart into two elements, x and v, and then we need to calculate x dot is v, v dot equals minus x, and then we calc u dot equals x dot and v dot, and then we return u dot. Does that work? Maybe. Let's try it. If we pass as input a particle at position 1 and velocity 0, then we expect, yeah, that works. So if the particle has a velocity 0, then the change of the position is 0. And if the particle has at position 1, then the acceleration is minus 1. So it's pointed towards the left. And now let's implement an ODE solver that takes one time step of size h according to the algorithm that I have written up here. Let's call it Euler. So a time integrator needs as input three things. An ODE integrator. You need the right-hand side and the initial condition and the step size you want to take. The right-hand side is a function. Let's just call it right-hand side. The initial condition, we called it y0 up there. Or should we be fancy? Let's try to be fancy. Y0. And the step size is h. And now let's just implement the algorithm. So first we define k0. We calculate k0. Let's call your right-hand side f, actually. Of course, we can do that. F is a function, so we call it with y0. And then we calculate y1 as y0 plus h times k0. And that's the result, right? So we turn y1. Okay. Do you see how this algorithm works? Now, this is probably the first time I show you that you can pass a function to another function. Yeah. I don't know whether you're familiar with that. Sometimes people use lambdas for that. But in many languages, you can pass functions to a function and you call it. So this is a function, not a number, and you just call it. But there's no global function called h, right? So let's call it, for example, Euler. We're taking one Euler step. We take the harmonic oscillator, right-hand side, and the initial condition. It's 1 and 0, and let's take a step size of, a small one, 0.1. And then the result should be the particle position has not changed. It remains at 1, because we take only one time step, and particle velocity has increased. And one thing we can do now is actually take 10 time steps and record the result. And let's do that. How do we do that? Let's do it in a simple way. I called the state vector u. So let's set u to be, it's probably good enough here. And then we take time steps for n in 1 to 10. Now we need some initial condition. What is the initial condition? That is u0. That is 1 and 0. And let's choose a time step size of 0.1. And then we set how do we do that now? Let's put u. Remember the initial condition. And then we now, let's not call this u. This is many time steps, right? Let's call it us, as in all the u's. U all, maybe u all. Let's do it like that. Sorry, I'm changing my notation here. Okay, so we take a time step. We call the Euler step on the harmonic oscillator, fho. That is very difficult to type. And the current step u and h. So we start at u. you take a step of h, and we assign that to u again, where we're kind of updating u. We're taking one time step. And then record it in this u all that is going to grow, all the u's, and then end. And then we output all the u's. No, what is this now? Okay. I think I need to make these floating point numbers just to not confuse Julia here, here. So we start at position 1, velocity 0, and then the position decreases, it gets closer to the origin, and the velocity here, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3 increases to 0.8, and so on. I think we should take a few more time steps to see what happens. For example, 20 time steps or something. Yeah, and then you see that the velocity actually starts decreasing again. Should we take some more time steps? Doesn't output all of them anymore. But you already see that at the end something bad is happening. Can you see what is bad with this solution here? The particle starts at position 1 and velocity 0. And then at the end it overshoots. And it does overshoot because the integrator is very inaccurate. The Euler integrator tends to overshoot. And the particle hasn't even reached rest yet, so it continues to run. This is why Euler integrator is bad. So this would continue to overshoot. And if we reduce the time step size h, we can do that. We reduce the time step size. Say we make it half as large over 2, and we take twice as many time steps, and then it should improve. Currently at minus 1.14, and with that thing we had 1.07. See, 14, 7, about half of it, although it hasn't reached rest yet, so kind of the error has halved when we do that. Okay. It would also be nice to plot that. Should we plot that, or should I move on to the next thing?
I have a question.
Yes?
Can you show please how to format output to like 3 numbers after the point?
Oh, yeah, sure. I can do that. So let's start by printing it. This is complete nonsense. Now there's no output, and now I'm going to use a different thing here where we output that. And then for u in u all, and so I loop over all the entries in u all, and then use a print to something, or if it just printed, then of course it looks like that. And the way to do that is to round u doesn't have sig dig. What is it? Sig dig. Okay, so the thing is round, and round has can take an additional argument, and sig digits, that's the abbreviation for significant digits in base 10. You can also say you want 5 digits in base 6 if that interests you. Sig digits. It's not round, what is it? What is that nonsense? X, 6 digits integer. Why does that not work? Oh, I want to round an array because the state vector is a vector, so I need to apply it to each element. And Julia has this shortcut notation where every function can be applied element-wise if you add a dot. And there you go. Now you have 3 digits. It looks much nicer. There's still a lot of things wrong with that because you have to scroll to actually see it. You probably want to output every 6th thing or so on. But what you really want to do is actually have a nice plot or something where you see the position as a function of time. Should I do that using... You know what? Let me not do that, because if I type using WGL Machia, Julia would seize up for 2 minutes because it wants to plot it. But that's something that we can do. Okay. Next, I want to show you the better integrator, the second order Runge-Kutta integrator, and then we're going to actually use one of the built-in integrators, just that you also see how a more complex integrator is built in. This was the Euler function. Let's just copy it, and I'm calling it RK2, because this is second order Runge-Kutta integrator. Now, I'm going to implement this one here. So instead of h, we take a step size of h over 2. Then we calculate k1 as f of y1. And then y2 equals y, just copy here, that's easier, y0 plus h times k1. And the result is y2.
Eric, can you remind me, please, where we have defined the function?
Which one?
F.
F is not defined in here. It's passed as an argument. So when you call RK2, you need to pass a function. And here I'm going to call it RK2. And I'm passing as function the FHO harmonic oscillator. I don't know. It looks like rho. It was a bad choice. And this function is defined here. Which implements just this equation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a completely generic integrator. It works for any y naught. Nothing here depends on the fact that y naught has two elements. This could be just one element, or it could be a million elements. If you advance the Einstein equations and you have a grid with a million points, you would use the same function here. You wouldn't use the Euler method. You'd use something better and so on. But you could. And it works for any function. So it could be the right-hand side of the Einstein equations or Maxwell or anything else you want. Okay, let's do that. I have a solution. You should never copy-paste in a notebook. You should instead write a new function. Print 3 of u, so let's just define it. And then we call it here. Then we need to recalculate u all here for that, and then we output it here. And then we run this one here, and then we u all. And this is the new solution. And lo and behold, it's much better. Wait, let's do one more step, actually. And see that it's not overshooting as badly. The error is much better. This is 0.03. Let me do the same thing here. Increase it and increase the time step size. Decrease the time step size and take twice as many steps. Then we arrive at the same time. And what happens? I need to output the solution again. And the error should be much smaller now. Oh, sorry, I need to go one further that we actually see. And you see the error is much smaller now than before. That's just because Runge-Kutta 2 is much better than the Euler method. Still, it's not a good method. I would not actually use Runge-Kutta 2 in practice. But what I want you to take away from this lecture, we are not done yet. I'm going to give you an example later on, is the fact that when one solves ODEs, there are these methods here. One evaluates the right-hand side and calculates a new solution, and another right-hand side and a new solution, and so on. And then you can cleverly combine the right-hand sides to cancel error terms to arrive at a higher order approximation. I want you to remember that any method that is first order accurate is usually very inaccurate, and it usually pays off to go to a second or fourth order accurate solution, because the computational cost is not much higher, but your accuracy is much, much higher. And solving ODEs, these are linear operations. It works with vectors very naturally. So the initial condition and the current state, this u, is usually called the state vector. Now let's do the same thing with ordinary differential equations here. Let me add some harmonic oscillator. Euler method. I'm just adding more comments that I should have done earlier. And then here. Runge and Kutter were two mathematicians, I think Danish. And now we do the same thing using a package. And the package is differential equations. And if you want to use the package, then that's always a bit of a step because you need to look at the documentation and what the package offers and so on. So let's briefly look at the documentation of the packet of that package here. So this is differential equations, and actually, is there something possible? Home. Oh, the whole system of packages is called PsyML in Juilliard. This is halfway a marketing term. Psi for scientific and ML for machine learning. If you want to get funding these days, you can't do numerical analysis. It needs to be machine learning. So we'll rebrand everything to machine learning. But 90% of machine learning is just the same old algorithms. One big advantage of this additional funding is, and an influx of new people to the field, that many packages got brushed up. And there's lots of tutorials and documentation, and things are automated that were not automated before. That is, in the past 10 years, there was an incredible progress, not just in terms of algorithms that are invented, but the ease of use that that makes it possible to use these packages. And this is what I meant. These days, you can't just say using differential equations and expect to get something high quality. You'd have to invest years of effort if you do something yourself. And 10 or 20 years ago, that would have been different. You can download a package, but you better talk to the package author to find out where the bugs are hidden. And that stage is not there anymore. So that does both things. Anyway, we are stuck with things like machine learning and so on. There are tutorials, cool examples, why? Solvers. Okay, sorry. I'm looking for a particular part of the documentation. Differential equations. Sorry, I'm a bit... maybe that's the page I was looking for. Yeah. When you want to solve ODEs, they are not just ODEs. There are many different kinds of ODEs, although in physics and fundamental physics, you don't encounter these. So we here have regular ordinary differential equations, but there are also stochastic differential equations. If you have some stochastic things, I guess that might be in finance. You have stochastic differential algebraic equations. Algebraic equation means that some of the conditions is not a differential. It's an algebraic equation, x equals 2y or something that comes in addition to that. Random differential equations, neutral. Sorry, there's also something about neural in there, discrete and continuous equations, and so on and so forth. So we are only interested in ODEs, but notice in particular this one here, split and partitioned ODEs, symplectic integrators, and so on. You might have heard of the symplectic structure of phase space. This is kind of a duality that exists there. So if you actually wanted to solve in practice something like a harmonic oscillator or the motion of planets, their orbits there, and you have a nice Hamiltonian or Lagrangian there, then you can express it in one of these methods. And then you tell the method more about the right-hand side. And then this method can help you, say, conserve energy, conserve angular momentum. And that is super important in practice. And for example, if you conserve energy, then you can't have overshooting. I mean, it would have to have a negative kinetic energy. So if you used one of these methods here, instead of a simple second order Runge-Kutta, that kind of problem would be gone away. I mean, there would still be an error in the solution, but there are algorithms that are tailored to particular problems that completely remove certain kinds of errors, and that is absolutely amazing. And partitioned ODEs means that when you present your ODE to such an integrator, you break the right-hand side into two bits. I mean, in our case, we have right velocity and then points, so it's kind of trivially just two bits. And then the solver can actually do a much better job. But let's just look at the ordinary differential equation, and now I lose the examples, classical physics. I just want to find example number one. Number one, decay of carbon 14. Okay. Sorry. Overview, defining problem. Problem types ODE. Was that one? Yes, I think this is example one. No, this is not. Oh, yeah. This is a really large package, and now that I lose my example here, oh, maybe I can go back in time to find my example. Sorry. Is that the one here? Yeah, example one. Very good. Getting started with differential equations. So this is the right-hand side they want to solve. There's this additional p in here. There is an additional parameter that you can pass into your right-hand side. And guess they need to access some other information. You don't have to use global variables. You can pass this additional p in here. They use t instead of what we call x, but that is that. So we have our function. And now let's implement the corresponding thing here. First, we need to define an ODE problem, and then we solve it. So we use that here, and then we define an ODE problem. To define the ODE problem, we need to specify the right-hand side, FHO, and the initial condition, U naught equals, what was it? We chose this one here. And the time span. So yeah, apparently they have a physics background, not a pure math background. They think of an ODE, the independent variable is always called time. Doesn't have to be time. If you integrate, say, the pressure in a star from the inside out, obviously would be the radius, but they call it time. And let's see, we solve it from an initial time to final time, I don't know. How long does an harmonic oscillator take? Probably takes pi or something, right? Just use 3.14. That's the problem. And then we solve it. So the solution, we solve the problem. And what additional parameters do we need to pass here? Nothing. Everything else is good. But actually, what the ODE problem wants, it wants a right-hand side function that takes these three parameters, the current state and extra parameters and the time. So we have the current state and the extra parameters and the time. And we have a right-hand side that only needs the current state and wants to ignore the others. So I'm defining this lambda function here as an abductor. Have I showed you closures or lambda functions? Anonymous functions. So this defines a function that takes three arguments, UPT, and the return value is just FHO of U. Okay, let me just assume that you understand that. And then we have a solution. And we did not specify a time step size because these methods can find a good time step size automatically. We didn't specify what algorithm to use. A default algorithm is a fifth order method something. It was this TSIT 5, I think, that is used. And what this method does is you choose an error, a tolerance that you want to have, and then it automatically adapts the time step size. And that works so many problems. And now after, well, let's go a bit further to 3.2. Yeah, you see it went to about minus 0.1 and then it started to turn around. The velocity is almost zero, but the particle is moving to the right again here. We should really plot that. So this is a much better thing, and obviously it's also much easier to use because all you need to do is import that package, define your initial condition and your right-hand side, which you need to do anyway, and the range where you want to integrate, and you solve it, you get that. And then there's all sorts of other goodies. And the fact that here you get the solution at 12 times, that is basically just a random choice. You can also choose other time step sizes that you want here. You can interpolate the solution. And if you're interested in ordinary differential equation, you might get interested during the tutorial tomorrow. Then I recommend looking at the tutorial here and looking at these examples here, because there's a lot there. Okay, this concludes my lecture today. Do you have questions? Anything confusing? Should we go back to the analytic bit here? Given that I told you to use the package, this seems like a waste of time going through that, but I think it's still important to understand the basics and being able to do that yourself.
That's fine, thanks.
Okay, very good. Then tomorrow we'll continue with partial differential equations, which is a much wider topic and also a bit more interesting, and there are not many packages to use. And this is what I use to solve the Einstein equations. I don't know what your interests are. I know Jonathan's interests. Have a nice day.